to the recommendations, listens to the public's input, whether that input comes electronically via our website or whether that input comes in town meetings that will be scheduled as early as this Saturday to hear comments from the community relative to the recommendations. I'll start, first of all, with a statement. The fiscal year 2014 is the first for the SLPS as a provisionally accredited district under the SAB. Previous to this time in March 2007, the district was unaccredited. This budget reflects the ongoing directive to provide a high-quality education for all students while focusing on the core instructional services. Furthermore, this budget addresses the district's responsibility as a provisionally accredited district to build a fund balance while also operating with a balanced budget. On October 16, 2013, the district was granted from DESE a provisional accreditation some 2,036 days from the time that the district was rated as unaccredited. And so the focus for us has been a focus around spending every single dollar we had to get to the point that we were at least provisionally accredited. Now we're moving into a position where we feel that it is necessary that we build a fund balance, and part of this conversation tonight is a conversation about that. The economic downturn, as has been already alluded to by Mr. Fisher, commonly referred to as the Great Recession, has adversely impacted revenue streams for all K-12 districts. We are no different from that. At this point in time, shrinking assessment evaluations of taxable property have had a significant impact on local tax revenue. This year, we've been able to recoup some $4.5 million that will go away after this particular year. DESE has been unable to fully fund the state funding. Right now, the funding is at about 94% compared to 100% is what DESE committed to doing, but we're at 94% of funding. In addition to that, as you know, or you may not know, at 12:01 on March 1st, which is Friday, if the sequestration goes through, the federal government's inability to reach some decision around federal dollars, we will lose approximately $800,000 at that point in time. So all of those things impact us as we move forward to putting together this budget. Some things that happen across the country. School closing. Philadelphia is closing 37 schools, or a recommendation from the superintendent, William Height, to do so. Increased health benefits, which we'll talk a little bit about today. Layoff, security issues. Obviously, the information that we are obtaining across the country as districts are doing everything in their power to make sure students are safe and secure. That is a result of that results in us providing additional dollars for additional security and security measures as well, some that we've implemented in our schools, some that we're looking to implement next school year. Unfunded early childhood program, some $22 million we spent of federal dollars for early childhood program. That's to support some 2,300 students. And it should be noted that there is not one single dollar from the state out of the general operating budget to support that. This is through federal dollars, through desegregation dollars, but we feel it's incredibly important to build a foundation by making sure that our youngest kids have a great opportunity. College and career readiness and implementation of the Common Core standards, which will cost us on the technology side. Some of the things that are happening across the country. In St. Charles County, $1.5 million was impacted from their budget in 2013, and another $1.1 million for 2014. I already indicated about Philadelphia closing 37 schools to impact $28 million. Parkway and adjacent district, $4 million in 2013-14 by eliminating 40 positions. Clayton cut $1.2 million in their budget in January. Rockwood School District officials say without revenue for the next school year, they will begin with a $5 million hole. Las Vegas has laid off some 400 personnel. 400 personnel as part of its reduction, with 1,000 teaching positions being part of that as well. So across the country, as already has been alluded to, there's some national issues that affect all of our school districts, and St. Louis Public School is no different. So what are some of our challenges? First and foremost, we have flat enrollment. If you don't have students, you don't get dollars to support those students in any kind of avenue. So we have flat enrollment. Some 27,000 students, some 2,300 students came as 2,800 students came as a result of the Imagine closure, as one parent has already talked about. But it does not mean that we are looking at an increase with additional charters being put in place. And this is not a charter school conversation. This is a conversation about the public school numbers in the city of St. Louis. I already talked about the state guidelines. So first of all, some state guidelines are impacting our social workers and our nurses at this point in time. We are scheduled to not be funded by 22 social workers and 6 nurses that were formerly coming out of federal dollars. Our grant sunset. We have a SIG program, a small learning community grant, that will sunset, meaning that at the end of fiscal year 2014, those dollars will go away. Some $15 million will roll away. Common Core, we have to put some technology things in place around that. Proud to indicate that we've been granted an E-rate amount of, I think, $11 million over the next 2 or 3 years, but that will not impact the dollars that we have to put aside out of our GOB account. Highly qualified, competent personnel. We do have a need to make sure that we have high-quality personnel. To do that, high-quality personnel costs. The adjacent districts that surround us pay more money than our teachers receive, so we are always challenged to make sure that we are trying to be competitive in this world around keeping staff. We lose staff because they go to adjacent districts and make more money. So there's always a notion as we are in the phases of negotiating with our local unions for the 13-14 school year is something that we have to consider as well. The cost to operate our buildings, pupil-teacher ratio in small schools, all of those things have an impact on our schools, as well as rising pension costs and transportation. All of these things tonight is my intent to spend some time, board and public, to make you aware what those challenges are, because I think not to do that gives you the impression that everything is working well and we could continue on the same trajectory that we have been on in the past. Fund balance. A fund balance is a measure of financial health. It ensures appropriate reserves for stabilization. Why bond rating agencies use it as a risk factor. DESE requires 3% of a fund balance in all districts that you have to put aside and put on, just like you have a reserve in your account. Those are the dollars we put on the side in case of rainy days, other kinds of things come up. If you look at our fund balance, over the last 4 years, we have had a negative fund balance, which means that in 2008, we spent $11 million more than what we had. In 2009, we spent $44 million more than what we had. In 2010, $65 million. 2011, $54 million. And now, because of the desegregation agreement, dollars being provided to us to cover the $35 million deficit we had, plus to get rid of the $19 million deficit that was active on our books, we're at approximately right now $11.9 million, with approximately $8 million of those dollars being in a restricted account that we can't touch because they are desegregation dollars that are used for a specific purpose. If you look at districts around us, Hazelwood has a 37% fund balance, $69 million in reserve that's in their bank account that they don't have to spend for any kind of obligation. Parkway, $26 million. Rockwood, $59 million. St. Louis Public, $11 million, with $8 of that million being desegregation dollars. And Springfield, $25 million. And so part of the conversation tonight is a conversation about making sure that as we move from unaccredited status to provisional status, and the hope is over the next year, 2 years, fully accredited status, that we have to make sure that we have a fund balance or reserves. So there's a policy on the books tonight for the board to review and to vote on next week that will require a fund balance and mandate that this board and this district place in an account a fund balance and not utilize that fund balance except for rainy day issues, not to cover the daily operations as we've done in the past, because the board made a commitment in 2008 as it was empaneled to spend every single dollar to address the needs that this district had, whether that was lead abatement, whether that was class size reduction. And so the intent now for this superintendent is to request from the board to look closely at making sure that there's a fund balance such that if a rainy day occurs, that the district will have the ability to be mobile and succinct in terms of addressing those needs. Public school enrollment, I talked a little bit about that. In 2009-10, some 35,000 kids in the city of St. Louis. That's not counting the 4,000 or 5,000 kids that are participating in the VIC program, but we're talking about kids who go to schools in the city of St. Louis. Some 35,956 in 2009-10. We're expecting that number to stay flat. Last year, this year is 37,010. That includes charters and that includes early childhood. We expect the number to be about 37,300. So only about a 200 student increase across the entire city. So over a period of time when the district had a number of students around 112 or 20,000 students, the district is about 37,000 students who are being educated in the city of St. Louis, not counting the 5,000 students who live in the city of St. Louis, but who leave the city every single day and participate in a voluntary intertransfer program. Fiscal impact of federal funding, one of the other risks. $5.3 million this year that we will lose. Some 7 positions in central office, 41 positions at school sites, some $2 million in discretionary funding, a sequestration of title funds as well, elimination of $1.5 million next year in our budget. That will impact about 16 academic instructional coaches. Now, we're not indicating that we're getting rid of instructional coaches, but what we're indicating is that 16 instructional coaches could literally go away if we use those dollars to impact them for the $1.5 million. Changing guidelines for title funding. I already indicated that the title office from the state has indicated that we cannot cover social work salaries with these dollars, nor can we cover the six nurse positions with these dollars. This is a slide that I like to spend a little time on because I think it's incredibly important. In 2009, this district paid $19 million for retirement. That means the district had to pay into the retirement board $19 million. Last year, that amount was $20 million. This year, December 31st, 2013, we have to pay $27 million for retirees. That is over 10% of our GOB budget. What I've said to the board and what the board has said to me and what we've said to each other and to other persons as well is the district cannot continue in this trajectory without some adjustment around this particular component. The retirees ask on a regular basis for a COLA, which is a cost of living adjustment. A COLA has not been provided since 2006 by a previous board. There will not be any recommendations from this superintendent relative to a COLA if the financial condition of the district remains the same, as well as the fact that the retirement amount continues to increase every single year. This amount was based upon the fact that the district had over 100,000 students. But even today, the district is obligated to pay a same cost or an additional cost based on the actuarial report that we receive on a regular basis. And that's part of the reason why on March 9th there will be a meeting at Carlane to meet with retirees to start some conversation and dialogue around this whole issue and topic. But it is a significant impact. The superintendent would not be at this table tonight if the amount that the retirees requested or retirement board requested this year was the same as what will be requested next year. So we're talking a $7 million difference with a flat revenue source. Transportation costs, we spent approximately $21 million at this point in time for transportation. 54% higher per student than the neighborhood. That means we have more kids in magnet schools. I know that Cleveland is here tonight, and I know some of the students ride to school by parents or metro, but a large percentage of students get on buses every single day at a cost that impacts what happens on a daily basis. So when you look at your costs, you're thinking about the small costs of teacher staff, the costs that are incurred as a result of every single magnet school student who's on a bus. In some cases, because of the location where kids are, our buses are as low as 4 or 5 students to as high as 60 students. But we have to incur that cost, and that cost is around $21 million. So 22% of the non-magnet students are transferred outside the boundaries of their school. That means they can walk to a school, but they are going to a school outside their boundary. In addition to that, 14% of our students are considered to be special needs, but that costs about 28% of our budget. That's about 90 buses every single day that are considered, quote-unquote, special education buses or buses that transport our special needs students. We spend $1.9 million a year for cabs. Students ride cabs to school who are considered to be homeless students. We have to put those students on a cab every single morning, sometimes from as far as Parkway, if they have moved to a district outside of our district, and put them on in a cab because buses don't go there, and bring them into our district, and then have to turn around and send them back home at a cost of $1.9 million. In a meeting today with my support staff, my director indicated to me, Dr. Adams, I think we may exceed that amount right now. We don't have any option to do this. If a student is identified as homeless, we must provide them an opportunity by law to be transported from their residence, wherever that residence is, to our district if they choose to do that. Many of the surrounding county districts do not accept our students once they are made homeless and there's not enough foster care in the city and they are with a foster parent in the county. We must provide transportation to them. Regardless of what anybody says, and I've had conversations with the state to look at other ways to do this, but we have to do it in a cab. Not in a yellow bus. We can't even put them on a van. We can't put four or five or seven, six kids on a van because it's illegal to do so in the state of Missouri. So those are kind of the implications that the budget has for us. At this point in time, because we are transporting kids outside of their neighborhood, the state considers us ineffective in terms of how we manage those dollars. It's not that we're ineffective. It's just that we have so many students that live outside the boundary, and it costs us another $1.4 million to do that. Alternative education, over the last 2 weeks, my alternative education office has had to accept 10 students from schools where they were put out of school, and we are responsible for supporting those students. You can see what the cost is. The cost is about $5 million a year for the six alternative programs that we have. That's Fresh Start, that's ACE, that's ICA. The ratio of students there is about 15 to 1. We provide social work services, counseling services at a very intense level to support those students. So when a school like any one of our schools put a student out of school, we still have to educate that student. They may not make the fit the requirements of a specific neighborhood or magnet school, but we are still legally obligated to instruct those students, and we do so at a cost of $5 million. At this point in time, we provide our district with 36 social workers. As I've already indicated, 61% of them, or 22, are covered by title, which is at risk today. 12 of those are covered out of our general operating budget, and 2% are covered through a grant that we have. But I want you to look at what the numbers say here, which I think is significant. Our ratio of social workers to students is 800 to 1, which is about 36. Rockwood has 9 social workers. Hazelwood, 15 social workers. North Kansas City has 19. Kansas City, 33, has 22. Memphis has 53. Detroit has 140. That's a 369 ratio to adults because of their union contract. The union contract does not allow them to remove social workers. Birmingham has 5 social workers. So while other districts don't have the same requirements that we have in terms of providing support to our clientele, and so we work extremely hard to put the supports in place to support the students in our district. And it is at a cost, and that cost is dramatic in some cases. Nurses and counselors at this point in time, because of the flexibility around House Bill 1543, we have 56 nurses. 6 of those are covered by title. I've said over and over again that we won't be able to cover them by title next year. We have 83 school counselors, and we are presently staffed at the desirable level. As a matter of fact, above the desirable level, which means that we have more counselors than we are required to have by the state. But we put those counselors in place to support the additional services that we believe our students need. In addition to that, I need to help you understand that while I am indicating here that we have some issues around nurses, we give medicine to 4,081 students every single day. Over 20% of our population needs to have medications, whether that's a diabetes shot or other kind of pills that they need to have on a regular basis in our school. Class size analysis, we are presently below the DESE desirable and minimal rate at this point in time. If we were going to a midpoint, we would lose approximately 82 teachers, but right now we're staffed below what the state requires at a desirable level. Minimum is the highest level at a desirable level. So our classes, while some classes may be higher than others, overall our classes are less than the ratio that the state requires. our building capacity, which has been alluded to tonight. We have 20 elementary schools that are at 90% or above the ratio of capacity, 5 middle schools and 3 high schools, 28 total schools altogether at the 90% capacity, 60 to 90%, 20 schools, and schools that have less than 60% capacity, 21 schools. And you can see that 7 of those schools are our high schools. So we have schools that have less than 50% capacity in the building. If a building can accommodate 1,000 kids, they may have 400 kids. But the building literally could accommodate more students. But we can't turn off electricity, we can't turn off gas, we can't turn off anything. We still have to provide all of the kind of supports that the school needs to have for the building to remain open. So how are we responding to this issue of the challenges that I just mentioned and talked about? First of all, we are looking at the following things. Our early retirement incentive program, staffing reductions, which I'll talk about, school closure, which some of you are here tonight to hear, and other non-workforce efficiencies. First of all, we have 115 of our employees who are eligible to retire who are 65 years and older, 286 employees eligible for early retirement incentive. Obviously, the older the employee is, the more money it costs to employ that employee plus benefits to do so. And we've done this over the last 3 years, not last year, but we're looking to provide a 3-year benefit premium for those persons who would opt to retire early. What will that do? That will, first of all, reduce our fixed cost for payroll. But what it will also do is reduce some of our costs for health benefits as well. So we will be initiating, if the board's permission after the 14, to survey, which we've already surveyed employees, to put this in place, which we think we will have some benefits of dollars I'll show you later on. Secondly, I'm proposing to the board that we move to a midpoint for class sizes. At this point in time, the DESE standard is 25. Our elementary schools K to 2 are at 20. The grades 3 to 4 are at 20. The highest 27. We're at 22. Grades 5 to 6, right now we're at 25. I'm proposing 27 compared to 30 from the state. At the 7 to 12 range, 28 is what I'm proposing. 30 is what the state standard is 28 as far as the lowest standard. The midpoint standard of 30, and a minimum standard of 33. I'll talk about what the numbers will look like in terms of cost savings. The SLP's proposed staffing reduction will look at about 134 positions. I'm looking to reduce 12 positions out of central office at a savings of about $1 million. Looking to reduce a combination of nurses, social workers, and counselors. Some of that may be a result of the recommendations around school closing. Some of that may be a result of attrition. But some of that may be a result of reduction in force as well. Share, reduce the high school non-core teachers. In some cases, we have very small AP courses, so we're looking to see how we could share staff among schools around AP courses and other CTE courses, as well as some video classes where those classes are extremely small. So we're looking to do that as well. We believe that we can save about 20 positions at a cost of about $1.5 million. Also, to increase class size to midpoint, we suspect that we can, by attrition and other measures of reduction in force, reduce our number of teachers to about by 82, saving about $5.2 million. So a total of about $9.4 million just on the staffing side. Proposed reductions and deletions of school closures. Sherman Elementary. Sherman is a school that is non-air-conditioned, one of our few schools that's still non-air-conditioned. I think there are 3 to 4 schools that we're looking to air-condition all of them with the last of our bond proceeds for air-conditioning. Enrollment of 173 students. We are looking to redraw the boundaries. The students can go to Mann, Adams, Shenandoah, and Hodgins, and we will work with families to place them in those schools. The cost savings is about $298,000. We have to decommission, which means close the buildings appropriately. So the numbers for Sherman over the last 3 years, in 2010-11, they had 140 students. In 2011-12, they had 138 students. This year, because we added an additional early childhood class, there are about 173. But the numbers are well below the capacity of the building, which is over 350. Plus, it is a school that has been a school that has been academically challenged in the past. Second school, Lovature, with enrollment of about 204, with a capacity of over 500, or right about 500. Seventh grade students who will be given opportunities to attend some of the magnet schools. There are only 87 seventh grade students. The eighth grade students will be moving anyway. They don't have sixth grade, so the eighth grade students will be moving automatically. They move to another school because they go to ninth grade. And we're working closely with those students to place them in the best environment, and we will be doing that normally. But the seventh graders, we will work with some 87. The cost savings, about 519. To decommission the building, about 65,000. The number of students over the last 3 years, 2010-11, 258. 2011-12, 238. This year, 204. So the numbers have gone down by 50 students over the last 3 years. So there's no incline, meaning the numbers increasing every single year. Cleveland ROTC, and your comments were passionate comments about how you feel about your school, and quite frankly, I would be shocked and surprised if this room was not full. And so while I hear you loud and clear, the intent here is to make a recommendation to close Cleveland High School. Cleveland will close over the next 3 years. The intent would be that ninth grade students, and there are only about 65 students who have selected this school as a first choice and will be coming to the school next year. Those students will be given opportunities to go to other magnet schools. We will not accept any ninth grade students. Expected enrollment next year will be around 200. It will allow all current students to finish out their JROTC experience at Cleveland. The cost savings is about 347. Should be noted that in 2010-11, there were about 257 students. Last year, there were about 260 students, and this year, there were about 279 students. So the numbers have not appreciably grown over the last 3 years. In addition to that, as I've looked at the data extremely close regarding this school, because it is a school that does well academically, no ifs, no ands, and no buts about it. And I applaud you for the work that you've done, especially Ms. Viviano, Dr. Viviano, for the work that has been done over the last 3 to 4 years for this school. And I realize you moved from Pruitt 3 years ago, and you were displaced from Cleveland High School several years ago, predated myself and this board. But the facts are what they are. In 2009-10, only 198 students applied for the school. Of the 198 students who applied for the school, only about 60 met the criteria to get into the school. The year after that, 2010-11, 192 students applied. Only about 60 to 70 met the criteria to get into the school. Last year, only 134 students applied. 134 students, and only about 60 met the criteria. It has the lowest rate of students who apply meeting the criteria to get into the school. And so while the criteria is extremely, like all of our schools, it has the same kind of requirement for all of our schools, 2.5, a letter, an interview, the whole processes. For whatever reason, it has been very difficult to get the number of students to apply to come to the school because there needs to be a higher number of students. So some 300 to 400 students would need to apply to say, this school is important and I want to get in this school. The numbers don't justify that. Even after 4 years, even after constant conversation with the administrative team to try to incentivize in every way possible students to go to this school. Over the last 4 years, that has not convinced this community and other parents to select this school as a first choice. Many selected as a second choice, and so our magnet school capacity is larger than what we want it to be. The real issue around high schools in the city of St. Louis is really simple. In Hazelwood, there are five high schools and there are 8,600 kids. In the city of St. Louis, there are 8,600 kids and 15 high schools. So students have multiple choices, and so they select other schools. And because we are a choice district and a large number of our schools are magnet schools, they make choices to go other places. And so for the last 4 years, despite every attempt to increase the number of kids at the school, the numbers have not increased. Even as late as this year, giving opportunities for every A-grade student to go to magnet schools, which Cleveland was one, to put them on a bus during the school day, to let them visit schools and walk away and make an application after the fact, the numbers still did not increase. So while you view this as a problem for the district, it is a problem of persons not making a selection for the school. Fresh Start, There are 80 students at Fresh Start at this point in time. It's one of our alternative schools that we will be closing because of a small number of kids at this particular school, a cost saving of about $325,000. Multiple pathways. We're looking to move from Stevenson, about 141 students, to Beaumont School. As you may know, Beaumont School has its last year of seniors who will graduate next year. It's a school that we closed last year, similar to what we're doing with Cleveland at this point in time. We look to save about $114,000. In addition to that, place high school students with high school students. Presently, we have middle school students with high school students, and we want to separate those two. And you can see Beaumont will close next year. Beaumont will only have seniors next year. They will close with about 60 seniors. We gave them an opportunity over a four-year period to go through the same kind of transition that we are recommending for JROTC. And while it was a small population of kids, we gave them an opportunity to co-op, which means that they could play sports at adjacent schools. If there are enough kids to play sports at the JROTC, if the board accepts this recommendation, obviously the sports program will remain. But the sports program was already compromised by the small number of kids, not just at this school, but at other schools where there are small numbers of kids who play sports. Those kids are not performing very well because they have a small number of kids and in some cases losing games like 90-3. And so we have to make sure that we're supporting our kids because it's a self-esteem issue if they're not being able to compete in a real rigorous manner. So the co-op thing allows us to take kids from one school and to increase the numbers at other schools. We're looking to look at our contracts, which we're looking at closely to save $1.2 million, transportation as well, and some energy savings about 2.2. So there are some recommendations for additions at this point in time. At this point in time, we're recommending or asking the board to look at or asking this community to look at. At this point in time, we have three bell schedules. The bell schedules start at as early as 7:10 in the morning. 8:15 and 9 o'clock. We're looking to reduce it to two tiers of scheduling for buses. It's going to cost us about $5.5 million because we have to add an additional 94 buses. So there's a cost associated with this. And we've done surveys around it, and I'll tell you what the results are. But there's research that indicates, as you can see, that the natural sleep-wake pattern shifts during adolescence, making early bedtime and wake time more difficult. The results for students with early schools, start time is a chronic sleep deficiency. Fortunately or unfortunately, high school students stay up late for whatever reason, whether it's email or whether it's looking at the web or television or whatever the case may be. And so the research is really clear that students don't get started until about 9 o'clock in the morning. We're forcing them to go to school at 7 o'clock, and force is the wrong terminology, but they're going to school at 7 o'clock. But I want you to be clear, parents and community and the board as well. When we surveyed parents and staff, they said no. They did not want to change the makeup of the time of schools. We surveyed them last school year. And so there was a clarion voice from teachers and parents that they wanted to keep things the way they are. Despite that, we're bringing this recommendation to the public because we think it's a significant recommendation. But we surveyed last year, and these are the results that we received, and it is going to cost us about $5.7 million to do this. The last recommendation is the board has already approved this, and I'm simply articulating it at this point in time, to open a medical high school. There seems to be a great need in this community for that, and we're looking at targeting about 75 kids and building a school.
Excuse me, Dr. Adams.
Yes, sir.
We're going to ask only one time that everybody listen attentively, respect Dr. Adams' presentation. Please don't make remarks to your neighbor or to yourself, or you will be asked to leave the room. I'm sorry.
The last recommendation is a recommendation around the medical high school, which the board has already approved, and we're well on our way. We're looking at several locations, Soldan, McKinley, or Central, as a possible recommendation, not necessarily Central in this case right away. Targeting 95 students. We're about 50 students who have been accepted so far, and they're working because they started in January to bring the students aboard. They're building a strong curriculum. Long-term plan is to look at potentially relocating in some location in the central corridor around Wash U and SLU and the Cortex building, and that's yet to be determined, but it's at least 2 years away before we look to having a permanent site. So, altogether, a staff reduction is 9.4, early retirement 1.2, and I'm not going to read all the numbers to you, but 8.4 savings. Our budget, if you look at it, carefully, is about $287 million. We rolled over $3.3 million that we had, that we suspected of having as a fund balance. We anticipate right now a $2.5 million deficit, although that was in September. We feel much more comfortable that we'll have a balanced budget at the end of the year, as we've had the last two or three years, utilizing the starting fund balance. While we had a small starting fund balance, the board did not commit to a fund balance. We got it by default. Dollars were saved by being very prudent around the dollars, spending the dollars, and so we think next school year we will start with about an $800,000 starting balance. The revenue about $282,000, some reductions as I've already talked about. The expenditures we think are going to be flat around where they need to be. I'm asking that the board commit to a $4.3 million fund balance, which is quite frankly small, and that we will, as a result of doing that, have a balanced budget for next school year. The intent here is obviously to take comments from the board tonight, but there will be the presentation will be posted on the SLPS website immediately after this meeting. You will have an opportunity to go online and provide feedback. In addition to that, Mr. Wallace will have on that website a call-in number where your comments can be recorded or taken as well. At Vashon High School from 10 until 12 on this Saturday, the superintendent and staff will be there to listen to any comments, and it's a listening piece. No comments, no responses will be given, but you have opportunity to voice your opinion. There are a large number of persons here tonight who have not had an opportunity to voice their opinion, and so you have opportunity. If you can't do it in person on Saturday, you can always go online and do so. And then I will go to Central High School in their new auditorium, Central Cleveland High School, to listen to your concerns there as well from 12:30 to 2:30. The anticipation is that the board will vote sometimes in March. After the comments, I will obviously come back and make any kind of adjustments that might need to be made relative to the recommendations that are here tonight. I apologize for taking longer than I would normally take, but I thought it was important to spend time through these 37 slides. Normally, it's about 7 or 8 that we do, but I wanted to make sure that I adequately explained the rationale and reasons why we're standing here, or at least why I'm standing here tonight, to talk about the issues that will affect us in 2014 and beyond. So at this point in time, I'll take any questions or concerns from the board.
In terms of the transportation and bell times, so that will bring our transportation budget up to roughly 28 to 29.
We're about 21 right now. We go up to about $27 million. That is correct.
My question is, so you found a way to do that next year. Where would that $6 million come from the following year?
It would be built into our budget. It would be a normal part of our operating costs and built into our budget.
Right, but we're going to be flat, so you're going to have to get rid of something.
Yes, that is correct. This community has to make a decision if starting school later for high school students, mainly because it's going to affect high school and a few magnet middle schools, equates to the reduction in social workers or nurses or the like. So some decisions have to be made relative to that. But I thought I would put it on the table once and for all so that this community can weigh in terms of what they feel about this whole issue around our bus schedules and how they are done.
So does that $9.4 million staffing reductions include the social workers, the counselors?
They will recruit some portion of them, yes, ma'am. We have not determined what the numbers will be from social workers, counselors, and nurses. I already indicated 22 social workers are presently being funded by title that would need to roll into GOB if we did that, and the same thing would occur with those nurses. I met with the support team today. They've heard this before. This is not the first time we've been talking about some issues around this the entire year. We would have to sit down. As a matter of fact, I'll be sitting down with them next Thursday between 3 and 5 to talk in detail about what they think and recommend after we get some feedback from the community.
Other questions, comments? Dr. Adams, just one clarification. If you can go back to slide 8. When you were addressing this slide, you were referring to, if you will, a negative fund balance in each of the last few years. And I just want to make sure it's crystal clear. And then later in the presentation, you have talked about the fact over the last 3 years, and we expect this year that we will have either a surplus or balance. So I want to make sure it's clear there's been a long-term negative fund balance at SLPS going back many, many, many years.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
But on an annual basis, this will be the third year that the district will be operated at break-even or a slight surplus. And I want to make sure that that is a clear distinction there.
Yes, sir, I want to be clear about that as well. Yes, for the last 3 years, we have had a balanced budget, but the outstanding fund balance as a result of a $35 million a loan that was taken out, as well as a $19 million overspend prior to the SAB being put in place, at least not entirely, but for the most part, we have had a deficit as it relates to fund balance, but not a, as far as balance budget, $300 million came in, we spent $300 million, but there was always a deficit that was there of $5 or $10 or $15 million that was always there. Yes, sir, that is correct.
And then a question, in the alternative, Ed, you provided a lot of historical data here, but in this school year, our enrollment is significantly lower. Is that because we're at mid-year and that enrollment will increase as the year goes on, or is there something else affecting that?
We have done a great job of supporting students in schools by our care groups and our teams at schools, so we've worked extremely hard to make sure that students are staying in school and providing them social work and counseling support. So the risk of cutting social workers and counselors runs the risk of increasing the number of kids who will be in alternative education, in an alternative ed program. So at the last board meeting, I gave a presentation relative to that. The numbers are not low because it's this time of the year. It's low because we have worked really hard to keep kids in school with support as opposed to removing them from school and putting them in an alternative setting.
And one last thing as a request. It was clear as you were discussing the recommendation on these school closures, this is something you have looked at over a long period of time. You've studied the data over a several-year period. And I would ask you to be sure that that information, that data, is available to the community when they come out for these presentations. I think it's important for people to know the numbers that you recited here. And also, I would ask you to make available to the community the schedule or the information that you put in place. You recommended to this board, and I think we acknowledged and accepted it, certain capacities that you expected, certain enrollments at every level of school. Elementary had a level, middle had a level, high school had a level. And that you have been crystal clear to school communities, certainly crystal clear to administrators, what the expectation was in terms of enrollment to keep schools open. So this is not anything new. It's certainly not new to the communities involved here. And I just want to be sure that that information is put out to the public, that we make sure that information is available to them, and that they can see how you have made these recommendations based on several years of information data.
Yes, sir, I will make sure we do that. March 2009, I had the board approve a proposal that indicated that high schools that were below a certain level, I think at that point in time it was 60%, elementaries I think it was 75, and middle schools at I think it was 65%. Over a three-year period of time, I will come back to the board and ask them to look at closing those schools. We worked with our administrators and schools over the last 3 years to aggressively incentivize them and also to help them recruit additional kids. And the cases that I am recommending tonight, that just has not worked. And so at this point in time, without continuing to go down that road, we are making a recommendation to look to close those schools. But I will make sure that that's available. Yes, sir.
Dr. Adams.
Yes, sir.
Is your suggested budget based upon the acceptance of all the recommendations that are presented here?
The board has some flexibility, Mr. Gaines. Once the board gives me some directions, I will go back and make whatever adjustments I need to make. So the answer to your question is no, sir.
You know, It's difficult to look at the numbers. You've given an overwhelming presentation relative to the raw, hard fact numbers. We had the same numbers 4 years ago when we were in panel. Cleveland, which at that time was located at Pruitt, made an outstanding presentation to us about what could be done to increase enrollment at Cleveland, all of the things that would happen in terms of the students working, the parents working, et cetera. So we walked past and said, okay, we changed our respective minds at that time. It's not hard to understand that in today's time, with the flight from this city, that our schools would be affected. Those of you who may not have been in the audience then and may be in the audience now, you stayed open that time because you came up with a counter-argument that was stronger than the one presented. As I would understand, it is very seldom that everything that's recommended by Dr. Adams ends up being, quote, the policy of the school system. I don't want you leaving here this evening thinking everything has been resolved, everything has been solved. Dr. Adams is presenting a proposal to us for our review. He's also presenting it to you to see whether or not there are better ways to do the things that have to be done. But you must understand there is not a great deal of flexibility in terms of meeting some of the responsibilities that not only Dr. Adams has, but this board, which makes the final decision on this, have to have. You can help us. You've already done one part of it that's significant. You have made your school an outstanding school. That's the first fight for you to stay afloat. I don't speak of this from not having knowledge. I happen to have been a student at the old Vashon, which you now know as Harriet Stowe Teachers College. I sat on this board when Cleveland Naval ROTC was first created and Cleveland High School was closed. We don't do this without the thought for your feelings. We don't do this without acceptance of your respective ideas. Now, can you turn this around? I don't know. But I don't want you leaving here believing that all of the die is cast. There is a compelling argument that's been presented to us this evening to do the things that have been presented. But we've had those compelling arguments before. School systems, homes, and families live and exist because they work together. They figure out problems. Those of you who sit here and want to have this become something different, you need to be talking about what options you believe you can come up with to make it different. I'm not saying give up, but you have a very serious problem that has to be addressed, and that's your entire school community, your administrators, your parents, as well as you. We have always been open as a board when presented with a more compelling argument. That's what you have to do in this situation.
Any other comments? Thank you, Dr. Adams.
Thank you.